Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
You're listening to Weird Medicine with Dr. Steve on the Riotcast Network, riotcast.com.
Give yourself a beer!
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out, blast with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve.
Dr. Steve! It's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio. No, I'm podcast. I'm Dr. Steve. This is a show for people who had never listened to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you've got a question, you're embarrassed to take to your regular medical provider. If you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call. 347-766-4323. That's 347-POOHEAD. Visit our website at drsteve.com for podcast, medical news, and stuff you can buy. Or go to our merchandise store at cafepress.com/weirdmedicine. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything here with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse practitioner, physician assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, registered dietitian, or whatever, all right, whatever. So about, you know, after 14 years, it's probably time I changed that opening script. But until then, check out stuff.drsteve.com. You just have a few shopping days left till Christmas, don't you know? Or Hanukkah or Kwanzaa. What is Boxing Day? It's some Canadian thing. Does that mean you take all of the stuff you got for Christmas and put it in a box? Or do you make boxes for people less fortunate than yourself? I do not know. And I have Canadian friends, and I had one of them who was Lana from Canada, who longtime listeners of this show know was trying to get health care in Canada and having a really hard time with it. I do get some Canadians that say, hey, our Canadian health system is awesome. And then I get people like her saying it's complete horseshit. So I think obviously it's context driven. You know, if you have an emergency or if you have something non-threatening, that you can wait for, it's great because it's free. But there are some people that fall in between that really are having a hard time with it. And that's, you know, if we adopted something like that in this country, we'd have to figure out a way, if it's even possible, so that those folks like Lana from Canada, we'll have her on the show at some point, and she can talk about her tale of woe. Anyway, check out stuff.drsteve.com. You can go there. You can click straight through to Amazon if you like, or you can scroll down and find all the different products that we've talked about on this show, some medical, some not. And if you need a stocking stuffer or something for an office, Secret Santa, tweakedaudio.com makes the best earbuds for the price. And the best customer service anywhere. And if you use offer code FLUID, you get 33% off. This is not some BS, you know, get 5% off or, you know, $10 off a $100 order. This is 33% off anything you buy. tweakedaudio.com, offer code FLUID. And check out Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. He's got the nasal spray back in stock, I understand, and it is quite excellent. I need some right now myself. He's been out, and I've my quality of life has declined because of that. Also, I understand that the Noom link on my website at drsteve.com has been broken for several months, and I didn't realize it. So if you tried to sign up for Noom and it didn't take you straight there and you got an error message, I apologize. I don't know how it happened. I just transcribed the link incorrectly once. But go to Noom. And it's I make it easy so you can just type it in. But if you want to click on the link, go to drsteve.com, and on every podcast, you can click Noom. drsteve.com, and you can attain your ideal body weight with me. It's a psychology app, not a diet app. There's no points, and it's a 3-month program. I've stayed with it for a year now, but you don't have to. You could just do 3 months, and you can continue to use the app afterward. You get a counselor. You get weight tracking, you do some weight log or meal logging so that you have some accountability with your counselor, and you also have a group and a group counselor. So it's really a good deal. If you go to noom.drsteve.com, you get 20% off if you decide to do it, and you get 2 weeks free so you can just try it out and see what you think. Tell them Dr. Steve sent you. And if you're lazy as I am, go to Freshly. drsteve.com. That's freshly. drsteve.com. They deliver fresh prepared meals that make eating right super easy. Use my link and get 6 dinners for $39 for 2 weeks. That's $20 off each week. Give it a try. Let me know what you think. Look, it ain't for everybody. I'm a lazy bastard. And I love to cook, but during the week, you know, my kids now, they've got so much crap going on after school. And one of the kids is in band, and the other one's taking nothing but honors classes. Even his advisor said, "What are you doing, dude?" So, there's just so much going on. So it's really easy for me to just pop these things in the microwave. And it looks like Lean Cuisines, except there's twice as much food in there, and it's, you know, freshly prepared. And they're really good. But now, it is microwave food, so it's not going to look like you cooked it in a pan, but it is, I'm very pleased with freshly.drsteve.com. And last, go to premium.drsteve.com and get archives of the show for $1.99 a month. If you use the offer code FLUID, it gives you a 50% discount. And you can just download everything and then unsubscribe. Or you can go to our website at drsteve.com and I can send you a flash drive. 32 gig flash drive with about 17 gigs of material on it. I had another thing I wanted to tell you about. I just redid my garage. Now, if you want to do a big project at home, go to SwissTracks.com. Check this stuff out. This blew me away. I was going to epoxy my garage, and then I found SwissTracks.com. There are these plastic tiles, and you just sit it, they snap together, and they make the coolest garage floor you've ever seen. Just go to it, even if you're not interested in doing it. If you decide to do it, use code Dr. Steve, and you get 25% off with flat rate shipping. And if they give you any trouble at all, let me know, because we're just getting started with them. And I'm not sure everyone over there will know, but Jordan is the person that I dealt with. And they don't really have an affiliate code, but I was so impressed. I said, if I tell my listeners about it, can you get them a deal? So Swiss Tracks, it's SwissTRAX.com, code Dr. Steve. Anyway, all right. Enough of that. Thank you for indulging me with all these ads and stuff. And it does help keep this going, by the way, and I really do appreciate you. Oh, by the way, malarkey. You know, say what you will about Joe Biden, but is it really? I mean, I guess because of Opie and Anthony and their influence on this channel, which was a huge presence back in the day, just a couple of years ago, the word malarkey was thrown around quite a bit, and I think in an ironic way. So when I see Joe Biden using it, it's like, well, we use that word every day. I talk about Dr. Scott's herbal malarkey on every single show, so I don't see the what all the hubbub is. But anyway, all right. I don't know that I ever did this story. This is a good one, I think. Very interesting. You know, people always talk about, male birth control. Why do women have to do it? And, men can participate in birth control. They can wear condoms. Of course, it does affect the sensation of having intercourse when you're wrapping a barrier between the skin of the penis and the skin of whatever you're shoving it in. But, here we go. So, there is, the researchers are male, and so, of course, they come up with female birth control. Well, here's the answer. First male birth control injection almost ready for penises. Yeah, okay. So, I mean, we would take a pill. When a woman uses a regular barrier, like a cervical cap, for example, it doesn't really affect their ability to enjoy the act of intercourse, but wrapping a penis in latex or some of these other godforsaken materials that they make condoms out of now, to avoid latex allergy, does affect it. So, we would take a pill. Why is this just revenge? I don't know that we have to, if we're going to have, equal representation in birth control, or men can take some control over this birth control thing, it has to be a shot in the nether regions. Well, let me read this article. Of course, this is from the New York Post, that really prestigious medical journal. But anyway, would men endure a shot in the groin to prevent pregnancy? Indian researchers think so. The Indian Council of Medical Research, a government-funded biomedical research agency, has successfully completed a clinical trial on an injectable male contraceptive, the Hindustan Times reported. The product is ready, with only regulatory approvals pending from the government. Dr. R.S. Sharma, senior scientist with the ICMR, told the local news outlet. The trials are over, including extended Phase 3 clinical trials, for which 303 candidates were recruited with a 97.3% success rate. No reported side effects other than having a needle stuck in your genitals, apparently. Product can safely be called the world's first male contraception. Well, no. Condoms are the world's first male contraceptive, but okay, yeah. Contraceptive medication, maybe. This birth control method, which lasts approximately 13 years, involves injecting a polymer called styrene maleic anhydride into the vas deferens. Okay, so this really is a barrier method as well, right? They're injecting a plastic, basically, into the vas and just blocking it, effectively blocking sperm from leaving the testicles. There you go. I'll give myself one of these.
Give yourself a bill.
The shot, so it's not a medication, it's a barrier method. The shot, preceded by a dose of local anesthesia, well, I would hope so, is designed to supplant traditional vasectomy. Yeah, so this is just basically a non-cutting vasectomy. In the sense, well, it's not vasectomy, because ectomy means cutting something away. And vasotomy would be cutting a hole in a vas. And so, but this functions the same way, so that sperm cannot make it from the testicle out into the real world through the urethral meatus. Researchers in the U.S. have developed a similar contraceptive called Vasogel, which has not yet been brought to market. A male birth control pill also exists, although researchers anticipate it'll be about 10 years before the drug makes it to market, which will suck for them because you have only a certain amount of time that you can patent a drug. And let's just say it's 18 years. And you wait 16 years, and it's from the time it was first synthesized, I think. I think that's how that works, or it's first identified. So now the clock starts ticking. You've got 18 years. And let's say you wait 17 years to bring it to market for lots of different reasons. You have other drugs in the pipeline, whatever it is. It takes 17 years. Now you bring it out, you only got a year where it's actually on patent. So that kind of sucks. So this pill, if it's going to take another 10 years, they may not have a long patent life on it. And they may just say, F it. You know, that's one of the problems with drug patent stuff. We want new drugs. We want new innovative techniques. And to do that, you know, they have to put millions, if not billions, into some of these drugs. And, you know, they need to make their money back if they're going to be a commercial enterprise. The government can do these things, but then it doesn't have that same incentive to innovate. There's an incentive to do good things, I guess, because that's what government's supposed to do for its people. But that crazy sort of drive to innovate isn't there without a profit motive. It's just human nature. And so, love them or not, the pharmaceutical industry has brought us some of the greatest advances, and their motivation has been, hey, let's make money. I don't see that as a bad thing. The polymer was developed by Professor S.K. Guha from the Indian Institute of Technology in the 1970s. Insert your own Andrew Dice Clay joke. ICMR has been researching on it to turn a product for mass use since 1984, and the final product is ready after exhaustive trials. So there you go. So you may see this come to market, that you can have a urologist inject this polymer into your vas deferens. It's got to be done exactly right to get it inside that tube to block the tube. And then you'll have to beat off several times into a cup, let them look at it, make sure that no sperm are wiggling past this. And then apparently it breaks down after about 13 years, and then you can start having kids again. So, you know, you'll have to stay vigilant. Unlike a vasectomy, usually by the time you do a vasectomy and they've cut chunks of your vas out and burned them and sewed them up and folded them in against each other and whatever technique they happen to be using, once you have a negative sperm count, you can mostly forget about it. Now, there have been some people that have just suddenly had a failure and they start having swimmers again. But with this, since this thing can break down after 13 years, probably every 5 years you'll need to beat off into a cup. And then do you catch it right when it happens? That's going to be a problem. So what if you're one of these people that can break this down quickly, but there's no test to know that, and you break yours down at 11 years. You beat off in a cup at 10 years, and everything was fine, but at 11, while you're waiting to do it at 15 or whatever, let's say we do it every 3 years, so we're going to do it at 10 and 13, but at 11, it's broken down. You can sire a kid. So you're always going to have that in the back of your head, unless you are, doing your own sperm counts, you know, right before you have intercourse with somebody. It's a little bit, it's a little iffy. This will reduce, if you did this to everybody in a population, it would reduce their population, but it wouldn't bring it down to zero. And it's 90, what they said, 97% effective. Yeah, in the first little bit, but then when, you know, we need to see the curve. Is that curve a gradual curve back down to normal? In other words, you start at 97% effectiveness. Is it 98, you know, 97, 96, 95 over the next bunch of years? You're in, you know, at what rate does the risk of you siring a child start to rise? Or does it go 13 years and then boom, it drops from 99 back down to zero? That's unlikely in a natural process, but if that's how it works, then you can have intercourse, you know, for probably 10, 11 years before you have to start worrying about it. So it'll be interesting to see. All kinds of things out there. Let's try this one and see what we've got here. Oh, nicely done. I'm going to give you all some applause. I may have done this already, too. Cigarette smoking among U.S. adults hits an all-time low. 34.2 million adults are still smoking. Many other are using tobacco products. It's reached an all-time low of 13.7% in 2018, a decline of approximately two-thirds in more than 50 years since the first Surgeon General's report warned of the health consequences of smoking. Yet new data released in today's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly report shows that nearly one in seven U.S. adults still smoke cigarettes. Many use other tobacco products. The marked decline in cigarette smoking is the achievement of a consistent and coordinated effort by public health community and our many partners, which this show is one, said the CDC Director Robert R. Redfield, M.D., yet our work is far from over. The health benefits of quitting smoking are significant. We're committed to educating Americans about the steps they can take to become tobacco-free. So, yes, please. Quit. I say at the end of every show, check your stupid nuts for lumps. Quit smoking and get off your asses and get some exercise. Those are the big three for me. To assess recent national estimates of tobacco product use among U.S. adults 18 or older, CDC, Food and Drug Administration, the National Cancer Institute, analyzed data from 2018 National Health Interview Survey. Survey measures current cigarette smoking use for other tobacco products. So cigarettes are still the most used product. Let's see if they looked at vaping. Followed by cigars, cigarillos, filtered little cigars, and e-cigarettes, 3.2%. Okay, so it's not as much. You know, I think because we see these people walking around and emitting these giant clouds of smoke, and people are more prone to smoke or, to vape in their car, we may be, at least I was overestimating how many people are actually using electronic cigarettes. Smokeless tobacco, 2.4%. Pipes, water pipes, or hookahs, 1%. I tried smoking a pipe. I did it for a while. It's disgusting. See, saliva gets in there and just chewing on this thing. It's just gross. You have to clean it out. Blech. Most tobacco current product users reported using combustible products. That'd be cigarettes, cigars, pipes, water pipes, or hookahs. 18% reported using two or more tobacco products. So those would be people who are smoking and dipping or chewing or whatever. E-cigarette use among adults increased from 2.8% to 3.2%. So that's a 0.4%, but absolute increase, but the relative increase may be much higher than that. Let's ask Echo. Echo, what's 3.2 divided by 2.8?
3.2 divided by 2.8 is 1.1429.
So see, that's a 14% increase, but it's only a 0.4 absolute increase. A reversal from the decline observed among adults during 2014-2017. I wonder if after this crap that went down with e-cigarettes and the lung disease that looks now like they've nailed it down, it was probably vitamin E in off-brand or, bootleg cartridges. And I got into a big Twitter thing about this. The thing is that people have been using e-cigarettes for many years, and all of a sudden we have this outbreak of lung disease. And the question was, is this a cumulative issue showing that there's long-term problems with vaping in general, or was it an acute outbreak? An acute outbreak is something different, because if everybody's been vaping, and we haven't seen this, and then all of a sudden we see it, and it's in the news, and several people died, and a lot of other people got sick. If it's not a cumulative effect of vaping in general, then it is an acute outbreak, which means that it implies that there was a manufacturing defect. And that's indeed what we're seeing, because some of the people that got sick were young and hadn't been vaping for a long time. So it wasn't like these were all people that have been vaping for 10 years, and now we're starting to see these adverse effects kick in. It wasn't that at all. This was, the implication was that something had changed in the vaping environment. And indeed, that seems to be the case, that some people, I guess, vitamin E oil, cheap to buy, and you can just mix it in with the other things that you're making as sort of a filler. And that wasn't, you'd think, well, it's a vitamin, should be good for you. But nope, it was not good for the inside of the lining of the lungs. So the CDC, it took forever for them to nail this down. This really was just an epidemiologic problem. Epidemiology being the science of disease and how it spreads and where it comes from. So the first epidemiologist was this guy that, and I can't remember his name. Let me see if I can find what he did was he tracked down cholera to a single well in London. Let me see here. Okay, so the 1854 Broad Street cholera outbreak. A severe outbreak of cholera that occurred in 1854 near Broad Street in the Soho district of the city of Westminster, which is a delightful part of London, by the way. And it's where the St. Ermin's Hotel is. And from the St. Ermin's Hotel, which I highly recommend, you can walk to Westminster Abbey, and you can walk to the bridge. And you can actually walk to the London Eye and the London Dungeon. And also if you go out of the hotel and take a right, walk around a couple of blocks, you can go to the palace, which is quite awesome. So anyway, Buckingham Palace. And tour the Queen's Mews. London is a wonderful city to visit, by the way. Anyway, so this occurred during the 1846 to 1860 cholera pandemic that happened worldwide. The outbreak killed 616 people, is best known for the physician John Snow. Oh, you know nothing, John Snow. His study of its causes and his hypothesis that germ-contaminated water was the source of cholera rather than particles in the air, which at that time was referred to as miasmata. And he was trying to debunk that theory. So really, John Snow was the first world's first epidemiologist. The discovery came to influence public health and the construction of improved sanitation facilities. Excellent. Beginning in the mid-19th century. Later, the term focus of infection started to be used to describe sites such as the Broad Street Pump, in which conditions are good for transmission of an infection. Snow's endeavor to find the cause of the transmission of cholera caused him to unknowingly create a double-blind experiment. This guy was awesome. George R.R. Martin picked the wrong name for somebody who doesn't know stuff. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go watch Game of Thrones. So preceding the 1854 Broad Street cholera outbreak, physicians and scientists held two competing theories on the causes of cholera in the human body, the miasma theory and germ theory. The London medical community debated between these causes the persistent cholera outbreaks in the city. The cholera-causing bacterium Vibrio cholerae was isolated in 1854, but the finding did not become well-known and accepted until decades later. Boy, it was really tough back then. People just had opinions, and they stuck with them. Oh, so different than today. Right? Yeah, people are really easy these days to convince using scientific evidence that their position is incorrect. The miasma theory. Miasma theorists concluded that cholera was caused by particles in the air, or miasmata, which arose from decomposing matter or other dirty organic sources. At least then, yeah, okay, so clean up dead bodies and stuff. That's good. Miasma particles were thought to travel through the air and infect individuals and thus cause cholera. So they had two competing hypotheses. When you have that, you test them. That's the easiest way to do it. Let's see what kind of testing they did. Dr. William Farr, the commissioner for the 1851 London census, and a member of the General Registrar's Office, believed that miasma arose from the soil surrounding the River Thames. It contained decaying organic matter, which contained miasmatic particles and was released into the London air. Miasma theorists believed in cleansing and scouring rather than through purer scientific approach of microbiology. So, yeah, so this is what you do. You can expose a sort of evil experiment would be to expose people to this miasma and see if they got sick, and then expose people to Vibrio cholera, if you were one of those proponents, and see which ones got sick. Or you can clean up your miasma and see if people get sick, but let them drink the same water, or clean up the water and see if they get better, you know, if the number of cases decrease. This Farr dude later had to agree with Snow's germ theory following his publication. So in contrast, the germ theory held that the principal cause of cholera was a germ cell that had not yet been identified. This was the problem with HIV as well. I remember there were people that said, oh, there's no way a virus could cause HIV or AIDS. We didn't have HIV at the time. But they were looking for a particle. Same thing with hepatitis C. Hepatitis C was called hepatitis non-A, non-B, because it wasn't hepatitis A and it wasn't hepatitis B, but then what the hell it was. It took quite some time to find the actual virus that caused hepatitis C. Snow theorized that this unknown germ was transmitted from person to person by individuals ingesting water. John Simon, a pathologist and the lead medical officer for the London, labeled Snow's germ therapy as peculiar. Yeah, you dumb bastard. This is an excerpt from John Simon. The doctrine is that cholera propagates itself by a morbid matter, which passing from one patient in his evacuations is accidentally swallowed by other persons. Yeah, it's called fecal-oral transmission, genius, as a pollution of food or water, that an increase of the swallowed germ of the disease takes place in the interior of the stomach and the bowels, giving rise to the essential actions of cholera. And as a first local derangement, that the morbid matter of cholera, having the property of reproducing its own kind, must necessarily have some sort of structure, most likely that of a cell. Even though Simon understood Snow's theory, he questioned its relation to the cause of cholera. No, he stated it perfectly. He just didn't believe in it. So that's fine. You don't have to believe something if there isn't proof. So what John Snow did was... Snow's conclusions were not predominantly based on the Broad Street outbreak. As he noted, he hesitated to come to a conclusion based on a population that predominantly fled the neighborhood and redistributed itself. he feared throwing off results of the study. So from a mathematics perspective, John Snow's innovation was focusing on death rates in districts served by two water companies which drew water from the River Thames, rather than basing it on data from victims of the Broad Street pump, which drew water from a well. Snow's work also led to far greater health and safety impacts. So what he did was he applied mathematics and science, and he plotted out where all these things were and found the epicenter. And what was common? Well, you know, what was the common thing? He did an epidemiologic intervention where he asked people, where did you get your water? What did you eat? What did you do? What have you been doing? Tried to compile enough data to make a conclusion. Said Snow was skeptical of prevailing miasma therapy, which held that diseases such as cholera or black death were caused by pollution. Yeah, because, you know, they had plague too, which we now know was caused by Yersinia pestis, which is transmitted from fleas that are on rats. So if you got rat-infested area and they've got fleas that have this, and the fleas get on you and bite you, then you could get bubonic plague. We still have bubonic plague. There are plague cases in the United States every day. We just call it plague because it's the same disease that they had back then when it was actually a plague. But it doesn't cause plague now because we know what it is and we can treat it. But we'll still call it plague. But it does not cause a plague, meaning, you know, this sort of overwhelming pandemic or massive epidemic. Let me see. Anyway. All right. This goes on and on and on. John Snow, the father of modern epidemiology, and there you go. So I can't remember why we talked about this. I found a shiny object and I followed it. Oh, yeah, we were talking about cigarettes and epidemiology of smokeless tobacco and vapes. But anyway. This sustained drop in adult smoking is encouraging as we work to reduce tobacco-related disease and death. And so what we're doing is by gradually decreasing smoking, we're giving the tobacco companies plenty of time to divest themselves of tobacco and broaden their product base so they can stay in business, get into making crackers and other kinds of stuff like that. So, all right, good. Nicely done. Thank you all for giving up the smokes. I used to smoke 3 packs a day. If I can quit, you can quit. Just do it today. And if you don't want to quit today, talk to your healthcare provider. Chantix is an option, although crazy dreams and wackiness are so prevalent with that medication that the FAA forbids pilots from taking it. But you can do it yourself. I did it myself. I had some pharmacologic help in the form of Zyban. Was it Zyban? Yeah. Which is just basically Wellbutrin or bupropion. It's an antidepressant. Works on a different mechanism than regular antidepressants. And it does help to suppress that addiction. That addiction response. And the thing I liked about it was I just felt like I was taking something. I think I got a significant placebo effect out of it. And so I laid them down. I started taking the Wellbutrin. But a week later, I laid them down and I never went back. And I had tried to quit at least dozens of times. Studies have shown the more times you try to quit, the more likely it is you'll be successful to quit. So if you tried it once and failed, it's not a failure. You were just practicing. Just try it again. And I would get 6 weeks in, and then my wife would piss me off. And I go, well, by God, I'm just going to smoke a cigarette. I'll show her. Well, I wasn't showing anybody. I was just, it was the lizard part of my brain that controls addiction saying, no, you need to smoke. And any excuse. So 6 weeks, you're vulnerable. 6 months, you're vulnerable. And, you know, 3 years, you're also vulnerable. At any time, particularly at 6 months, you go, well, I've got this thing beat. I could just have one. You can't. Yeah, let me just have one cigarette. I've got it beat. I could just have a cigarette. You can't. If you have one, now it's all of a sudden it's okay, and then you're smoking again. I still have nightmares after 20 plus years of quitting smoking that where I smoke a whole pack of cigarettes in this dream, and I'll think, well, wait a minute, I forgot. Oh, geez, I don't smoke anymore. And now I feel like I'm addicted to cigarettes again, and I wake up in kind of a cold sweat going, thank God I didn't actually do that. The craving, I never crave cigarettes anymore. I still like the smell of a fresh cigarette. It's just years of ingrained habit of smelling them. I despise the smell of old cigarettes, though, and I can't believe I used to smell that way and allowed myself to smell that way. So if you quit today, you can immediately look at all those idiots out in the cold outside smoking because they can't smoke inside anymore and say, what a bunch of idiots, and feel superior to them. That's one benefit. You can feel superior the next day. All right? Okay. Quit smoking. All right. Let's take some questions. You ready to take some questions?
Hi, Dr. Steve. It's Luke from London, England. I was hoping you could do a recap on the one-page baby manual. It's been a while since you mentioned it on the air, and me and my partner are due to have a baby, a boy, on the 22nd of December. It'd be our first baby, and we'd really like to get him to sleep through the night as soon as possible. If you could go through it, that'd be great. Love the show. Keep up the good work. Thanks.
Yeah, man. Thank you. The one-page baby manual. Yes, I haven't mentioned that in quite some time. You can go to drsteve.com or weirdmedicine.com, I think, or weirdmedicine.net. Heck, now I'm confused. Is it weirdmedicine.com? Weirdmedicine.com. Just in case I decide to sell drsteve.com. So I keep hoping that some Dr. Steve will become famous so I could sell them that domain. Yeah, weirdmedicine.com will work. And then if you go there, there's a little box in the upper right corner. It says resources. And second from the bottom is the one-page baby manual. And it's grown to about a page and a half now, but it's one page on the internet. And it gives you a sample schedule starting from birth to 6 weeks, 6 weeks to 10 weeks, and then 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, and then to a year. And then it also has a synopsis of the happiest baby on the block, which is a 200-page book that I distilled down to one paragraph. And this guy, Karp, had a really good idea, and that babies are born 3 months too soon, that they need an extra trimester to develop. And so when they're born, they're used to being in the womb in that warm, wonderful environment. And we need to simulate that for the first 3 months, and that will calm them down. When they get all fussy and weird, it's because they're used to being in the uterus, and they really kind of are craving that back to the womb thing. So by swaddling them and laying the body out, or the baby on their side, and shushing in their ear to simulate the sound of blood rushing through the aorta, past the uterus or the iliac arteries, at least, because, you know, inside the body, you don't hear lub dub, you hear shh, shh, shh as blood rushes by. And swinging the baby on your lap, you know, just back and forth, and letting them suck on something. In utero, they'll suck on their thumb. This is the one time a pacifier is okay. I'm cool with the pacifier for the first 3 months. After that, you got to get rid of it. But all those things will calm almost every baby down. You got to learn to swaddle that baby. So one of the greatest things you can give a new parent is a pack of swaddling blankets, because they'll run through them. And learning how to do that properly, and it kind of binds the baby's body, and they just feel much more comfortable. And that gives them that fourth trimester if you do that for the first 3 months. And then after that, just use go to babyinabag.com and get sleep sacks. Those are wearable blankets. If you value sleeping at night, when your kid kicks their blanket off and they're too uncoordinated at 4 months to pull it back up, they get cold and they'll cry. You know, that's all they really want is for you to put their blanket back on. Well, you get them a wearable blanket. And that's also a great baby gift, babyinablanket.com or babyinabag.com, a.k.a. the wearable blanket. And they've got winter versions and summer versions. We're not, you know, they're not an advertiser. I just, anytime somebody's having a baby, I'll give them one of those. All right. Let's see what else we got here. And congratulations on the baby and good luck. Let us know how
it goes. Hey, everybody. This is Foggy Otis. I went over 20 years without seeing a doctor or a dentist, and by the time I was 42 years old, I paid for that. Neglect and denial led me to congestive heart failure, a quadruple bypass, dying in the ICU, having a defibrillator pacemaker implanted in my chest, losing my teeth, injecting insulin four times a day, constant blood glucose monitoring. Side effects from my meds, the ones that keep me alive, include fatigue, hot flashes, cold chills, and stomach problems. Practically all of this was entirely preventable with routine medical care, so don't wait until it's too late. Go see a doctor now. And Dr. Steve knows all the details about my medical history, so
do I?
Feel free to ask.
Okay. No, Foggy. That's Foggy Otis, everybody. This guy, I think this is the real dude. Check him out on YouTube. Let's see. Foggy Otis plays the Grateful Dead. Let's check this out. I probably can't play too much of this because of issues with copyrights.
Down, way down, down, down by the docks of the city. Blind and dirty.
Yeah, so he is reimagining the music of the Grateful Dead for solo ukulele. That's a heck of a niche right there. Let's see. He did Bohemian Rhapsody. I want to hear this. Let me see. Greatest pop single of all time, arranged for ukulele and voice. It is. That's it. Whoever was recording this was whispering close to the microphone. That's pretty cool. Let's jump ahead. Check this out. Go Foggy Otis. It's just Foggy Otis, Bohemian Rhapsody.
Too late. My time has come. Send shivers down my spine.
That's pretty cool, actually. I kind of like this. Let me jump ahead to the quote unquote good part. Okay. Anyway, check out Foggy Otis. Thanks for calling in, Foggy. And no, really, the thing that I like about what he said was, men particularly, but I see this in women too, will bury our heads in the sand, and it's a pain in the ass to go to the doctor, sometimes literally. But you don't want to neglect warning signs, because when you do that, we all know. Look, if you've got a leak in your an oil leak in your car, catching it early and fixing it can prevent a catastrophic failure of your automobile, right? I mean, we all know this. Catching a colon polyp when you're 50 and you have your first colonoscopy, when it's just in the polyp stage, they remove it during the colonoscopy, you're done. You don't have to do anything else. If you wait until now you've got an obstructed bowel or you're bleeding and you have it and you've got a full-blown invasive cancer, now, you know, all of a sudden it's a problem. So early detection, prevention is key to living a long and healthy life. and quitting smoking, and if you're young, checking your stupid nuts for lumps. All right, very good. I got some good feedback on the Dave Cecil thing. We're still working on that track. When we have a completed track, I will play it for both SiriusXM and podcast audience, so stay tuned for that. Dave is an incredible singer-songwriter, and if you want to check him out right now, let me see if you just do Dave Cecil Weird Medicine. Let me try that and see if it comes up. Dave Cecil Weird Medicine. Yeah. And then the first one is Dave Ray Cecil Live. Oh, and that's the episode. Okay. And then, okay. What you want to do is find it on YouTube. So let's try that again. YouTube, youtube.com. Sorry. I know this is very unprofessional to do it this way, but, you know what? Just go to my, go to Dr. Steve YouTube.com. And that's not helpful either. I'll put a link on drsteve.com to the YouTube video where Dave Cecil was in the studio, and you could just click on the links and listen to the songs. Okay. It's just like being in court. You never want to ask a question you don't know the answer to, and don't do a damn YouTube search on your stupid show if you don't know what you're going to find. Anyway, all right, let's see here. Let's take a couple of other phone calls before we get out of here.
Hey, Dr. Physics Steve, it's Calvin. And when we look at a flower, the white light from the sun shines down onto the flower, and then the flower absorbs all the colors except for, let's say, yellow, and then the yellow reflects back into our eyes, where our rods and cones in our human eye absorb that reflected light, and then we see the flower as yellow.
Right.
Is there some way that we can look at the world and see what the actual world looks like instead of just the reflected light into our eyes? Let's say even into the ultraviolet or infrared included in there, instead of just what the human eye perceives. Is there some way to see the actual colors of stuff?
The actual colors of stuff. I love this question. It's a philosophical question. So what is the actual color of a red apple? The answer is there is no actual color. There are just wavelengths of light. That's all it is. There, you know, light is in the electromagnetic spectrum, just like radio waves, microwaves, ultraviolet, gamma rays. Gamma rays, not cosmic rays, but gamma rays are merely very highly energetic electromagnetic waves or particles, depending on what you're measuring at the time. Therefore, they're all the same. They're on a continuum. So if you start at, like, you know, a ham radio frequency could be at 160 meters. It could be 100 or 40 meters. It could be 40 meters long. Whereas a light wave is measured in angstroms. So which is, you know, nanometers. And the higher the frequency, the more energetic the wave is. So, you know, ham radio frequency is like 2 meters, very low energy, but a gamma ray being very high frequency is, a very high energy. Microwaves are in the gigahertz range. So our eyes are just able to perceive these different wavelengths of light. And if you've ever looked at a rainbow, you can see the different wavelengths appear in our heads as different colors. So we have the ability to differentiate wavelength, and then the brain interprets those as colors. Now, you've got some people who are colorblind. They can't see red or green, but the world to them is, you know, it has these funny shades of gray, and it's hard to explain how it looks. You can look on YouTube and say, well, what does it look like to be colorblind? But even to them, it just looks normal. Dogs don't see color at all, you know? So everything to them would be to us black and white, but that's just normal to them. That's how they perceive the universe. You could have some creatures that grow up on a planet where there's red, you know, they have a red dwarf as a sun, and they may have larger pupils and may be able to see into infrared, and they would be able to see things reflected that we wouldn't necessarily see. How would they perceive that? Well, it might be as the color red. What I see as red, you might agree is purple. The only way that we would know that was the case would be somehow if we could switch brains for a minute, and I would see how you perceive red and how I perceive red. Probably that's not the case, but there may be some subtle differences. There certainly are people that can detect different shades of color that other people can't. And is it training, or do they just have a more finely attuned visual cortex so that they can pick out those different colors? It's like sound. Sound are just compressions of air molecules. That's all it is. That leads to that whole thing. If a tree falls in the forest and nobody's there to hear it, does it make a sound? Well, it certainly vibrates the air around it, but it's only sound if we perceive it as sound. Otherwise, it's just vibrations of molecules. And the color red is merely, let's see, the wavelength. Of red light. Let's see. I could have asked Echo that, but so the wavelength of red light is 680 nanometers. So that if you have an electromagnetic wave that hits your retina and it's 680 nanometers, it will stimulate the cells in the back of the retina that respond to 680 nanometers, and that tells the brain that that's red light. And, look at a rainbow, and next time you look at one, you can think about how all those different colors are stimulating different receptors in your eye and are being perceived as those colors. So there is no reality other than our perception. There are waves, and there are particles, and, you know, even the particles that we experience are just perturbations of fields that permeate the whole universe. There's an electron field. There's, up quark field. All these different fields interact, and when they interact, we perceive those as particles, and those particles interact with each other, and that creates the natural world around us. So, you know, the reality around you depends purely on your perspective and your perception of same, which is pretty damn cool when you think about it. So enough pot talk. I'm recording this at 8 in the morning, so not a great time for pot talk, but I'd love more pot talk questions. Love to talk about this stuff. Well, let's take another one and see what we got here.
Dr. Steve, I've got a question about blue balls. I was wondering why it hurts so bad. Sometimes in the morning, I'll kiss my girlfriend goodbye, and I'll get the old half crank in my pants, and my balls, ache. Not like when I was a teenager, but is there any mechanism why that hurts so much?
Yeah, so, if you're cranking your nuts, they hurt because they're on the outside and they're supposed to be on the inside. Really, nuts are just ovaries that produce sperm instead of eggs. And they need to be about 3 degrees below body temperature for whatever reason. So they got to hang outside the body, and they're organs, and they need to be inside the body. And so when you when you hit them on something, it you have this visceral pain, and it's a different kind of pain. We all know that. Men who have gotten kicked in the nuts causes sort of a emesis feeling or nausea, and it's just sort of a deep, horrible pain. But blue balls is a different thing altogether. That's prostatic congestion. So congestion of the prostate is caused by often sexual stimulation. And the prostate starts getting ready to inject fluid into this sort of mixer. So you've got fluid from the prostate, which is sort of milky and clear, and then you get seminal fluid, which is not milky and clear. I meant milky and watery. And then you have seminal fluid, which is a little more gel-like. And then that mixes with the 2% of the sperm that comes from the vas deferens. And you put it through this sort of blender, and it comes out as semen. And so the prostate is gearing up for that when you get a little sexual stimulation. And, you know, there's fluid will just be generated in that area. You know, capillaries open up, and hyperfiltrated water and other proteins cross from the bloodstream into the prostate and sort of fill it up. And then you don't do anything with it. You don't ejaculate. And that prostatic congestion that we feel, we perceive it as what we call blue balls, which is just sort of an achy feeling. And if you beat off and or otherwise ejaculate, either through prostatic massage, which is not truly an ejaculation, when a primary care or a urologist massages your prostate and fluid is ejected from the end of your penis, it's not truly an ejaculation. It's just hydrostatic forces where fluid follows the path of least resistance. But a true ejaculation where you have contraction of the pelvic muscles and that sort of rhythmic thing and that feeling of emptying out, and then you get that pleasurable feeling, that will relieve the symptoms of blue balls. If you just do nothing, the symptoms of blue balls will also go away pretty quickly. But anyway, thanks always go to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. We can't forget Rob Sprantz, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teft, Lewis Johnson, Paul Ofcharsky, Eric Nagel, Roland Campos, Sam Roberts, Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Ron Bennington, and Fez Wally, whose early support of this show has never gone unappreciated. Big shout out to Rob Bartlett, who was awesome on Compound Media this week. And I always love seeing that guy. What a great guy he is. Check him out at the Rob, the Robbio, R-O-B-I-O, T-H-E-R-O-B-I-O on Twitter. Listen to our SiriusXM show on Faction Talk Channel, SiriusXM Channel 103, Saturdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern, on demand, and other time at Jim McClure's pleasure. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules and podcasts and other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.